Welcome to Northern Goal, the football podcast from the Evening Express and Press and Journal. In this week's episode, Aberdeen run Celtic close at Pittodrie as the season-defining Scottish Cup replay with Kilmarnock looms, Ross County battle back for a point against St Johnstone, and even a truly honking refereeing decision can't keep Caliph Thistle out of the Challenge Cup final. Once again, our teams had a mixed weekend in Leagues 1 and 2, while in the Highland League, title hopefuls Fraserburgh prepare to meet leaders Brora Rangers. I'm Ryan Crail, and with me in the studio today are Paul Third and Callum Law.
How are you doing, Ryan?
How are you doing?
Yeah, not bad. You both good?
It's okay. All right, Tuesday.
Okay, so as always, we'll start with the Dons. We could have beat the champions on Sunday, but ended up suffering a narrow 2-1 defeat. Nevertheless, Paul, a performance the Red Army will have been happy with?
Very, very much so. For the first time in it that I can remember in quite a while, we had everyone standing in front of where the press guys are in the back of the main stand, and they stood up to applaud their team off a park in defeat. I honestly can't remember the last time it's happened, but it really just hit home how much Aberdeen had put into the game and really showed that's all Aberdeen fans are looking for. They don't mind getting beat, but there's a way of losing a game, and if there's a right way to go about losing, Aberdeen certainly did that on Sunday. They were not afraid to go for broke, and ultimately it may have cost them by getting caught in the counter, but they put everything into it, and that's all the fans are looking to see from their team.
I think that's the big thing, because too often, whether it be against Celtic or against Rangers, the complaints afterwards have been about being too passive, almost particularly the 4-0 game earlier in the season. It was done and dusted before half time and everything, but I think Celtic for a while in that game on Sunday were probably looking at it going, we would settle for a point here. The only real frustrations for me watching it was probably, I think, the first goal that Aberdeen conceded was soft in sort of third quarter of the game. Really, after half time they were in a lot of good positions, and maybe the final pass or the final shot wasn't quite there to get in front. But
you mentioned the first goal. I go back to being a young boy at school, and the gym teacher, the first thing he said was, don't let the ball bounce. And that's exactly what happened, and it takes all the sting out of it. Scott McKenna's struggling to get any sort of purchase on it, and Lee Griffiths, a little nudge, and he's off and he's in. McKenna gets back, but the ball gets put across, and it 2 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. Really frustrating.
Was there an element of panic there? Once McKenna had lost that duel, he shouldn't have lost.
I think,
but
so
Lewis Ferguson should be tracking Callum McGregor in that situation. Yeah,
well, someone should be. I don't know if it was his job.
They were caught short as well, because when it was worked across to James Forrest, I thought he was going to pull the trigger first time, but he was sort of open because of the people coming in centrally to cover as a result of McKenna losing that battle with Griffiths. So I think that was where the sort of problems came from. But
the good thing about it, though, was Aberdeen's reaction, because they lost an early goal when Celtic were last up here, and we all know it went on to be a horrific first half, probably the worst of Derek McInnes' tenure, 4-0 down at the break, but they responded brilliantly on Sunday.
And I think Curtis Main, I thought Conor McLennan, other than his dive, was really good first half, but I thought Curtis Main, through nothing really more than just his desire and his work rate, was such an important player, because even if Aberdeen were penned in a wee bit, Lewis Ferguson, Afunza Ojo or Shea Logan could put the ball in the channel, and Christopher Juling, Christopher Ayer and Nia Beaton, whoever it was that was covering Curtis Main, would just chase it, and they didn't like it. They were put under pressure, and especially with the wind, a lot of the time they were heading out for a throw-in or a corner or giving away a free kick, and it just, things like that get you up the park and get you chances.
Main's given his manager a problem now. He's come in at Hamilton last week and done brilliantly. Showed so much composure in scoring the first goal and got the man of the match performance from the telly, and then follows it up with another excellent display.
Mm-hmm. It's a strange one, isn't it? I mean, you've got a 21 goal striker on the bench, and in many seasons for Aberdeen, that guy's a first name on the team sheet. But in the moment, I almost feel Curtis Main does more for the team than Sam Cosgrove does. There's a, especially in a game like that, where you need, when you get the ball up the park, you need somebody to trap it and then bring other players into the game. He seems to be a bit more adept.
It sticks with him, and the runners get up in support, and suddenly it's a whole new threat that the opposing team is facing with Aberdeen getting players beyond the main striker.
The one thing I wouldn't have minded seeing on Sunday was Curtis Main and Sam Cosgrove potentially up front together for longer, because Cosgrove didn't come on until after Celtic's second goal. And when Neil Lennon changed his shape and went to a back four in the second half, and Aberdeen made their first change with Bryson coming on and Niall McGinn went wide, I wouldn't have minded seeing when Matty Kennedy come off, Cosgrove go on, McGinn go wide and go 4-4-2 and just try and, because at that point Aberdeen were in control of the game, just try and keep Celtic on the back foot by having two up front.
Having said that, if you're going to play two at Aberdeen, I think McGinn has to be the one of them, because he's got the movement, the creativity and just that bit of nouse guile to get in and around defenders and cause them problems.
Yeah, the 10. Obviously we need to go backwards to Aberdeen's equaliser. Not the best defender from Celtic. Ash Taylor was left all on his own, but for a centre-back to chest it down and finish with such a quality volley, brilliant.
Oh, it was superb. It was superb, and it capped what was a very good performance for Ash Taylor, coming straight back in after a couple of matches out. I actually felt a bit sorry for Mikey Devlin. I mean, I know he missed out due to injury, but
he just can't get anything going, can he, Mikey Devlin? He plays a couple of games, and you think, and he's did well in the couple he played as well, and you think, oh, he's back, and then something else happens. You do feel for Mikey Devlin a lot, but Taylor's finish was, any striker would be proud of that.
Is Taylor harshly treated by the Dons fans, in a sense that when he comes into the team, sometimes there is this attitude on a minority in social media probably of, oh, Taylor's back in. However, in these games, he's definitely the toughest tackler, and he comes up with big moments.
He's dominant, he's physically imposing. If we're being critical, it's when it's not a big game that you maybe look at Ash Taylor and think, oh, is the concentration going to be there? But the Ash Taylor who's come back to Aberdeen has been very good. I would think he's come back a better player than the one that left.
I would agree with that, and I think a lot of his reputation's probably from his first spell, but probably his first season and a half. I think as well, Ash Taylor, his reputation's come for maybe making mistakes. He's maybe been unfortunate in that sometimes I think defenders make mistakes and they can get away with them, but I think Ash Taylor, his first time round, went through a spell where every mistake he made seemed to result in a goal, and then you sort of become the target for blame.
Yeah.
Obviously, Celtic went on to get that second goal and win 2-1. In that move, Andy Constein was possibly culpable. Funzo Ojo was possibly culpable, but Ojo had a cracking game before that, did he? A real sort of, he's got a real ability to get out of tight situations in the midfield, and he also makes brilliant recovery tackles most of the time.
He could have a guy on his shoulder, he could have two, he could have three, and he'd still be giving the ball and he'll move it on or turn away from the guys chasing him, and he just kept the play going and kept it going and kept it going. And that's why he's getting the start now ahead of McGeoch. It's why he's the linchpin in front of the back three or four, whatever it may be. He's becoming their key guy now. He's up to full flight.
That's what, especially when you play Celtic, that's what you need, is somebody that will take the ball and get you up the park and get you out of those tight situations. But I do think he was a bit culpable for the second goal, because Christopher Ayer, the fact of the matter is, he's quicker than Andy Considine, especially in over whatever it was, 80 yards of that. Andy Considine tried his best to get back there, but Christopher Ayer is just quicker, and I think Ojo could have gotten across to cover, but he just sort of followed Edward inside, which was understandable. But
if we're being cynical, did we not just need somebody to go, oh, I'm just cleaning somebody out here, I'll take one for the team?
Well, it stemmed from Edward at his back heel in the middle of the park. Ideally, if somebody had just gone through the back of him and taken a yellow card, that would have solved the problem. But I'm not 100% sure, but I think it was maybe Ash Taylor who was already on a booking, so that's one of them.
So Aberdeen stay third then. They're still level, 41 points on Motherwell. They move to cup action tomorrow night, Scottish Cup fifth round replay against Kilmarnock at Rugby Park.
Easy peasy.
It's a bit of a season definer, isn't it?
I think so. I think for the fans it is. I mean, you would under 15,000 on Sunday for the Celtic game. I think you would see those numbers dwindle a bit more if Aberdeen were to be knocked out of the Scottish Cup. Killie came up and really made no effort to do anything other than earn a replay. They can't play the same way tomorrow night. They just can't, and I think that'll suit Aberdeen.
That will suit Aberdeen. I think you speak about the supporters. there's obviously not so much the last week or so, but since the winter break, there's been the murmurings about, are the team making progress and people unhappy with Derek McInnes. For a lot of people who are maybe undecided, the Scottish Cup is the one thing they've been clinging to. And I think if Aberdeen were to go out at Rugby Park, there'd be a lot more questions asked about whether progress is being made, because realistically, it's at the start of every season, it's what supporters are looking at. It's been 30 years. They want to see their team win the Scottish Cup. And if you get through, I think the league form will probably be helped by that as well, because people will be wanting to play for places to be in the big cup games coming up, whether it's quarterfinals, semi-finals. And I think if they do get through, I think they'll definitely go on and finish third as well in the Premiership.
But we're expecting at least one change, aren't we? Funzojo, as we've already talked about him. He obviously, when Celtic scored their second goal, he ended up clattering into Joe Lewis, or Joe Lewis clattered into him, ended up with 15 stitches in his knee. So Craig Bryson obviously came back from his ankle injury, played a few minutes at the weekend. Did we see him just being a kind of straight swap?
I'm not sure. I would like to see McGeoch. I think he's still struggling for sharpness as well, but I think McGeoch would be my starter. With Bryson as well, as much as it was good for him to come on and get minutes on Sunday, having not played for nearly 3 months, was that it was with the Kilmarnock game in mind, but was that the best platform to put him on when the game was very much in the balance? I'm not 100%. Sure, but it'll maybe reap its rewards at Kilmarnock.
I think looking at the game at Rugby Park, if there's going to be there is going to be an enforced change, I don't think it'll be McGeoch or Bryson that'll play the Ojo role. I think it'll be Lewis Ferguson. And that then opens it up. And that's what the manager has to decide. Does he put Bryson in there? Because I don't think McGeoch plays in a more attacking role against Kilmarnock.
No.
If it's not Bryson, then it's maybe McGinn, and you're looking at Kennedy and McLennan either side, and he's back to one up top.
Okay. Well, the Dons also have a game against Ross County this weekend when they're back in Premiership action. However, we'll talk about that in the next section when we move on to our North teams, Ross County and Caliphisle. Okay, so next up we'll discuss our teams in the North, Ross County and Cali Thistle. Joining us for this section is Jamie Durrant. Jamie's been on secondment with the Staggies and Cali Jags over the weekend. Two entertaining games to see, Jamie?
I would say so, kind of despite the ridiculous weather conditions over in the Highlands at the weekend. I was kind of, first of all, I was surprised kind of both games finished, kind of given the conditions of the pitch and the torrential rain that was throughout the 90 minutes of both games. But I mean, County at first, as you expect, it wasn't kind of a great quality of game. And St Johnstone had handled the conditions much better. They'd managed to keep the ball down and actually play a bit of football, which, again, you're not expecting that from a Tommy Wright team. You're expecting them to be more kind of dogged and kind of restrictive. But they were kind of by far the better team in the first half, and Stevie May in particular delivered a performance I imagine Aberdeen fans were probably been waiting months and months for.
His goal was brilliant, wasn't it?
Yeah, the kind of the link-up play that he'd had with Chris Kane, and then the composure to take it in front of goal. It was like the Stevie May of old, almost. He was very busy, as you'd expect, but what impressed me with him was his link play. He was kind of dropping a lot deeper into spaces and collecting passes, and then kind of finding teammates in pockets of space. And it's, again, it's a little bit of a snippet of what he's capable of. And County, for much of the first half, they didn't have a great deal going forwards. A lot kind of went through Josh Mullen down the right-hand side and trying to fling crosses into the box, but they weren't getting enough bodies in there. And the three at the back system, it worked in terms of trying to keep the back door shut a little bit, but they weren't kind of providing much going forward for Billy Mackay and Ollie Shaw.
I suppose it's maybe what you have come to expect from County a wee bit this season, in that they've scored a lot of late goals, and they always seem to keep going, whether they're only a goal or two down. You can never quite count them out. But how important was it just to come back and get that point, given Carl Donaldson's had gone off injured as well, and they're playing with Tennant? Because it could be a vital point come the end of the season.
It's one of those the proverbial ones where it feels more like a win than a draw, you know, given the manner of the game. For the last kind of 15, 20 minutes, they did kind of up the ante a little bit and push St Johnstone back. I think they said after the game that St Johnstone had kind of gone to five at the back towards the end of the game, so you kind of knew how they were seeing it. And County had the impetus then, and they had the need to go and get the goal. And it had appeared for all the world that it was going to finish as a 1-0 win. To say it's gone right into the depths of injury time before Billy Mackay's popped up with a goal you'd expect him to get, a 6-yard box, Poacher's goal attacking across.
He's as good as anyone in the country in that sort of area, Billy Mackay. He has been, whether it's been Carly Thistle, Dundee United, Ross County. He's a penalty box player, is he? He's reliable in there.
Yeah, get the ball to him, he will score.
He's a much different kind of type of player than they've got with Ross Stewart, who they know they can kind of fling crosses at or kind of get aim kind of more direct passes towards. Whereas Billy is going to run the channel, he's going to work his socks off for you. But you know, as soon as the ball kind of comes around that penalty spot around the 6-yard box, he's going to be there on the end of it. And that's twice now in two home games that he's delivered big goals for them.
How big a miss is Donaldson going to be? Obviously, he's a guy that came in, was going to be the quicker of central defensive option. He's probably looking at quite a spell on the sidelines. Where does that leave the older boys as they get ready to come to Pittodrie this weekend?
It did look like a pretty horrendous injury, kind of, when you see the pictures of him coming off the pitch and his eyes completely closed. It was from the far side of the pitch from where we were sat, so we didn't kind of see too much of the incident itself, just the pictures afterwards. He's obviously kind of wanted to play Premiership football again after his kind of spell at Dundee United, and they have maybe struggled for consistency in terms of selection at the back. Marcus Fraser's kind of been the one regular, and you would think that it would probably be either Keith Watson, I would think, that would slot straight back into that team. Whether they still go with three at the back or whether they kind of go four and be a bit more solid down the flanks as well against Aberdeen, that'll be a choice for the managers. But again, Donaldson's been a consistent pick since he signed from Inverness, so I imagine they will miss him.
Okay, so obviously County are left in ninth place. They've pulled a point further clear of St Mirren below them, and they've kept the gap with St Johnstone, who they were obviously playing, to 5 points. Carly Thistle, they were in action against Rangers Colts in the Challenge Cup semi-final. You were also at that game. That was there was a controversial decision, but a good fight back from Carly Thistle.
Yeah, like you're saying, the main decision, obviously the James Keaton's one, and then the disallowed goal for Tom Walsh as well, could have overshadowed the game if Inverness hadn't gone on and won it. And it was a hugely impressive performance from the young Rangers players. I think both John Robertson and Scott Kelleher had said that afterwards, that they were really impressed with how they'd acquitted themselves. And they were certainly, again, in the first half, they were the better users of the ball and handled the conditions better. And Dapo Mabudi took his goal really well. And then you're kind of thinking it's not going to be one of those days for Inverness, so with the decisions that went against them. But yeah, I think towards the end of the game, with the kind of the extra experience and know-how that they had, they did kind of emerge probably with the result they were wanting. But again, Rangers were could have walked away with the heads held high from that one.
I have to say, Jamie, I was delighted to see Carly Thistle go through for a number of reasons. The first one being, I think that the Challenge Cup's in the context of their season very important, you know, just to, because the championship title's surely now gone, so to get to the final and potentially win silverware, I think is a big boost for them as a club, and can maybe help them, you know, even in the championship run. And also, having watched it, that refereeing decision, I think, of just absolutely appalling. There's no case for a defence there at all. It's not like he's unsighted or anything. He's 2 or 3 yards away, and the boy clatters James Keating. So I just don't see how that can be overturned, and how it can't not be overturned, if that makes sense. But in the appeal tomorrow, if that red card isn't rescinded, then serious questions need to be asked about the whole appeals process, because that's just, I think that probably
diabolical
the
word you're looking for.
I would say it's the worst I've seen this season, and particularly to come in a game like that where you've then got James Keaton's potentially missing a cup final because of that decision is just absolutely shocking. And the other thing with the Challenge Cup as a whole, which is a totally different argument that you won't want to go into, but I've never been a fan having these Colt teams in the competition for a start, so to stop one of them getting to the final, I was pleased that Cali managed to do that as well.
Jamie, obviously Miles Storey seals the win for Inverness in the end, so it doesn't really matter too much unless it doesn't get overturned. You saw the incident live. Can you understand why the referee's given him a second yellow there for diving?
No.
Exactly. even in real time, it's clear. I don't think it's a penalty because the context is clearly it's a free kick in real time.
It was Jamie's question to answer.
I know. just calm down.
There's mutual agreement here, but there's steam coming out of my ears here because honestly, it's Jamie, it's just, even if it was in the far side, you would have still. Well, you were on the far side from it, weren't you? With where the press box is, it's clear as day, isn't it?
You just have to look at the way that James Keaton falls. It's not like one where you throw yourself to the ground. His body shape is clearly one where it's been impacted by something else. And the position he's in, he's got little reason to try and go down because he's going to get a chance at goal or a chance at a penalty. And Greg Aitken seemed to make his mind up pretty quickly that Keating's had dived, which, again, is what kind of the manager and what John Robertson and Scott Kelleher have said after the game, that he seems kind of like predetermined that, oh, yeah, that was it, he was going to be off. And Greg Aitken and Inverness have previous, I think there's three separate occasions, I think, where John Robertson's come out after the game and he's been unhappy with decisions that Greg Aitken's made. And it's inexcusable, really. And he can kind of get out of jail a little bit if he does agree that it was an incorrect decision and he does overturn it, because at the end of the day you are depriving someone of the chance to play in a cup final. And kind of James Keating's kind of tweeted it sarcastically afterwards. I think he retweeted a video clip of the incident itself and just said, "Oh, so now I miss a cup final," which it underlines his disappointment at the whole scenario. And you would hope common sense would prevail, but
you never know.
You're never quite sure with these disciplinary processes how things are going to pan out.
Next week's podcast is going to be terrific if this ban is rejected or upheld. Sorry.
We must move on to Cali Thistle's Friday night game this week against Dundee United. They can't really catch Dundee United, can they, Jamie? But the aim has to be to stay clear of Ayr United in third place.
Yeah, I think that's as much as kind of Dundee United have having a little bit of a stumble of late. I don't think there's any like realistic chance of them losing grip on first place. So for Inverness, it has to be about cementing second place, but also kind of keeping Dundee United honest. I don't think they've really kind of laid a glove on them this season in the league meetings that they've had. And so the best game that I've seen them play against them was the Scottish Cup quarter final at Tannadice last season when they beat them and got through to the semis. So they probably need a similar performance like that, and obviously Dundee United to maybe have a bit of an off day again. It would be hugely kind of morale boosting for them if they were to go to Tannadice and win. It would give them a great lift in the season's running, and with the Challenge Cup final to come at the end of next month, as it's proven in the two previous occasions that they've won it, it's given them great momentum going into the final few games of the season.
I think as well, Jamie, Cali Thistle should be confident that they can cause Dundee United problems on Friday, because they haven't. Dundee United for the last few weeks now haven't been in particularly great form. They got beat at home to Arbroath, and I saw them on the TV last Friday against Alloa, and I thought they were, and drawing 0-0, but I thought they were pretty poor in that game as well. So I think it's there for Cali if they perform like they can.
Okay, so we'll wait and see what happens with that one. Thank you very much, Jamie, for getting in touch this morning with your expert analysis.
No worries.
All right, so next up we'll move on to our lower league teams, Peterhead, Cove Rangers and Elgin City. So first up in the lower leagues, Peterhead's 1-0 loss away to East Fife. Callum, I understand they didn't make the most of possession.
Yeah, it seemed to be another of those games that they've had quite a lot of this season, particularly away from home, where they have had more than their fair share of possession and played quite well, sort of middle of the park, without really creating enough clear or as many clear-cut opportunities as the players and Jim Marcanally would like. And then I think, again, with the goal they conceded, it was a bit of a mistake from the usually reliable Greg Fleming. So that was...
He looks like he's already taking a dog for a walk, I or know, something, but the guy's running through a goal.
That's having spoken to Jim since the game, that's what has frustrated him and the players I like so much this season. I was looking at it, they've lost, I think in the league this season, they've lost 10 games by a single goal. And just about all of those, I think the winning goal or one of the goals has been as a result of an individual mistake. And you can't really legislate for them, and it's proven to be very costly. But I mean, they move on. It's a big 10 days starting on Saturday again, or a big week starting against Airdrie on Saturday, and then it's Forfar on Tuesday and Stranraer away the following Saturday. And I mean, Airdrie being third in the table, I think's a wee bit of a, not a free hit, but Peterhead probably not really expected to take anything out of that. But I think Forfar and Stranraer, if you could get two wins from those two games, it would be just massive in the context of the season, because it pushes you away from the bottom two.
Let's play devil's advocate. What happens if it goes the other way?
Well, if it goes the other way,
it's
then
a huge
it's
week.
That, well, it is a huge. If it goes the other way,
roll your sleeves up and.
But well, if it goes the other way, particularly if Stranraer beat them as well, and I'm not sure who they're playing on this Saturday, but Stranraer are a wee bit cut adrift in the automatic place, but if they win, they could be coming back into it, and then it gets really tight. But it's tight. Peterhead, Forfar, Clyde, and even Dumbarton are only a few points further up the table. So it's every game now matters. Every point matters now. It's
okay. So we've been going from potential negativity down to League Two, where
just asking the question.
You've got to cover all bases.
All round positivity for Cove Rangers. We beat their title rivals Edinburgh City 2-1 with a late goal via Rory McAllister. It's a big win, isn't it, guys? 6-point gap at the top now.
Oh, they needed it. They needed that one after the slip up at Elgin the week before, and 1-0 down as well. It was a huge test for Cove, but I guess they're showing why we all think they are going to be champions with a response like that. Mm-hmm.
I think being able to come from behind as well, particularly when they were without Mitch Meginson. I think Edinburgh City, when they saw, well, he obviously didn't feature against Elgin the week previously. I think when Edinburgh City saw the team sheet on Saturday and saw that he hadn't made it, they would have been delighted with that. But Rory McAllister, as we've known for many years, if you give him chances, he will score goals, and that's what he's done. And it could be massive again come the end of the season, that goal, to be 6 points clear again in a position of a real strength now. And we better mention Daniel Higgins' equaliser as well, because that was some strike.
Back from injury, sticking in the top corner from 20 yards. Unbelievable.
Centre back as well. It's a couple of
the weekend for centre half scoring.
Him and Ash Taylor, it's been some week for centre back finishes.
Is this weekend's game against Queen's Park, obviously Queen's Park are a few places below Cove on the table, but will they, on current form, provide a stern test?
I think they will, because Queen's Park, probably since January, mid-January, have been one of the, if not the form team in the division. They've obviously, over the course of this season, become professional now and paying players, and they signed a couple of guys in the window who'd come out of full-time football, and they've got Ray McKinnon in as manager, who's vastly experienced at a higher level than League Two, and their playoffs is clearly what they're after now as well. So I think they'll come up and give Cove a good test. But having not lost at the Balmoral Stadium yet, having not even dropped points at the Balmoral Stadium yet, I would still have my money on Cove.
It's why you want to win this league, because Queen's Park, as you've said, are the form team. They're going to have money behind them for next season. They're coming into the playoff contention now with confidence, and they're going to be the side to watch, I think, when the playoffs kick in.
Yeah.
OK, Okay, so obviously Queen's Park this weekend played Elgin City at Hampden. 2-0 win for them. Disappointing for Elgin after beating Covia.
This is just Elgin, isn't it?
It must be infuriating. I mean, it was a difficult game, Queen's Park at Hampden, given the form they're in, the players they've got, but it's Elgin one week, it's a high,
two steps
one week
forward,
it's a
one
low.
Step back, it's, it.
But there's no need to be too downbeat about it either, because they've dropped to fifth, but there's 4 points separating third to sixth in League Two just now, and Elgin play Cowdenbeath on Saturday at Boro Brigg, so, you know, they could feasibly be sitting third come 5 o'clock on Saturday.
I think the big thing when you look at, we've just chatted about Cove there, they can absorb the loss of their captain and most influential player in Mitch Meganson. Elgin are without Shane Sutherland. They lose so much impetus in the final third when he's not there.
Well, you're right, thirdly, because realistically, when he plays, everything goes through Shane Sutherland. So the sooner he's back, the better.
Okay, so next up we'll discuss the Highland League. Okay, so we move on to the Highland League. First of all, we'll discuss Devon Vale, who got their first win since Christmas. But the big heartwarming story was the return of influential striker Dane Ballard, who returned after, I don't know, 17 months pre-war knee injury.
Yeah.
Big win for them.
It's a good one, yes, because it's always like beating your local rivals. So
Turriff United, who I don't think we mentioned that it was them that they beat. There,
yeah, so. But Ballard was the story for all followers of the Vale at the weekend. Out for 17 months after a serious knee injury, the fans have rallied round to raise, I think it's about £7,000, to get the surgery that he needed to get him back sooner than expected. And it's a great tale, and it's great to see him back. He's such an important player for them.
He is. Well, that's the season before he got his injury, he scored, I think it was about 30 goals in a Devon Vale team that finished mid-table, and I think Devon Vale, since he's been out, have done well to be where they are, so him coming back, and if he can get up to speed, it's like having a new player.
From his point of view, it's get the match sharpness back between now and the end of the season, and the Vale, I think the Vale will be worth the watching next year.
I think that's it, and players like even Robert Scott, Grant Noble, if you keep them fit as well, they're good going forward, Devon Vale.
We'll come back to the rest of the weekend's results, but the big focus this week is obviously the top of the table clash at Bellesley between Fraserburgh and Brora. Fraserburgh weren't in action this weekend. Their game at Rothes was off because of a waterlogged pitch, while Brora won 3-1 at home against Keith. This is huge, isn't it, guys?
Which cliche do you want? Win or bust? Do or die?
Six-pointer, it's all. It's just, well...
If Brora avoid defeat, they are champions. There you go, I'll see it.
That's what I would say as well. Thirdly, but I do think in terms of games that you play in the Highland League, Fraserburgh at Bellesley is as tough as it comes. And if it's a big if when you look at the table and Fraserburgh have the 4 games in hand and they're currently 17 points behind. But I do still believe if Fraserburgh can win on Saturday, they can take the title race into the final few weeks of the season.
It's just how much fuel is left in the tank. That's the key thing if you're a follower of Fraserburgh. I've had cup runs, cup finals.
Well, they've been close in every cup, but they were rested. Well, they probably trained, but the game was off at the weekend, and the previous weekend they were the free team, so they've had a couple of weeks now rest. So I'd imagine Mark Cowie and James Duthie and everyone will be just these final 12 games, give it everything we've got and see what happens. But
it's a fascinating one because Brora lost at home to Fraserburgh earlier in the season, but I think it must be the only game they haven't scored. Maybe that and Nairn.
That and Nairn's the only 2 games they haven't scored in.
So you're looking at, 90 goals in the other 22 games that they've won. It's frightening. And they'll be really fancying the chances of putting this to bed this weekend.
I think so. But I still think, for me, I still haven't seen a lot of Fraserburgh this season. I still think they have a chance.
The capabilities.
The capabilities, definitely. All through... They're strong from front to back, so I still think they can get the result on Saturday that they need.
Still life in the race yet, listen to you guys.
Might be totally different next Tuesday.
I was about to say, as a neutral, but I'll nail the colours to the mast. I'm from the Brock, so I'm not really neutral here, but I think everyone other than Brora would like to see the Brock get the 3 points to keep this going and give us something to look forward to towards the end of the season.
Yeah, well, it's and the thing is, I suppose, with having... teams having free weekends and the way the weather's been for certain teams as well this season, it gives it an interesting makeup, because you look at the top of the league and everybody's played a different amount of games, so it's all, it's difficult to predict with games in hand and things like that. So.
Okay, so the other results in the league this weekend, apart from the ones we've mentioned, Bucky Thistle won 3-1 at Lossiemouth. Fairmartin beat Huntley 5-0 at North Lodge Park. Fort William's game against Forest was off because of a waterlogged pitch as well. Inverurie Locos beat Strathspey 4-1. And as we mentioned last week, Clatton Cuddin's game against Nairn County was postponed because of ongoing issues at Grant Street Park. When it comes to this weekend, apart from Fraserburgh against Brora, there's Forest Mechanics against Turriff. Fort William host Lossiemouth. Huntley host Clackna Cuddin. Keith take on Inverurie Locos. Nairn County host Bucky Thistle. Strathspey Thistle welcome Devon Vale. And Rothes are at Wick. Okay, so that concludes this week's episode of Northern Goal. Thanks, of course, to Paul Third and Callum Law for joining me in the studio today.
No problem, Ryan. Thank you.
And obviously, we're thankful to Jamie as well for joining us from the north. If you've enjoyed listening, please subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And finally, enjoy the football wherever you are this week, especially Bellesley. Hope you loved the episode, and if you did, we'd be grateful if you could leave us a review or rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to pick up your copies of the Press and Journal and Evening Express every day for the best football writing and analysis in the North.